Om Agyanata Minandasya Jana Jana Salaka Chaksus Militan Zena Tasmai Sri Gidavay Namah Sri Chaitanya Manavistam Stapitam Zena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sapadantikam Vansa Kalpa Dupasya Kripasinu Vayavasa Patita Lam Papane Bilvaisamevi Namah. When Prakrit Maharaj asked Sukadeva Goswami about the meditation of the gopis upon Krishna and the result of that, which was they became free from all by the pain of their separation in meditation upon Krishna. They were free from all their what? Anyone remember? No, that's the impious, all the pain, the transcendentalizing almost of the pain of, or the, excuse me, bad karma, pup, sinful activities causes pain. All the pain we experience, all of it, all the suffering, all the misery, it's all sinful reactions. So by having the most intense pain of meditating on Krishna and not being able to go to him. These were the gopis who were prohibited from going to see Krishna. The pain of that burned up all the petty material pain from previous karma, bad sinful reactions. And the ecstasy of in that separation they were feeling from Krishna, in the ecstasy of being with Krishna through separation, that burned up, the ecstasy of that burned up all the petty happinesses that were their karma as well. So in this way they became free from karma. And some of them even left their bodies, and some in their spiritual bodies went with Krishna. So that caused Sukadev to answer, or Maharaj Prakrit to ask the question, well, if someone else, a spirit soul, everyone is a spirit soul, everyone is Brahman, Krishna is Parabrahman, we're all part of him, so does that mean if I miss and love and meditate upon a person of this world, I'll get the same result? And then in answer to that question, Sukadev, before deeply describing the rasa dance itself, he explained the difference between Krishna and an ordinary living entity. So he was very, very careful. Even right up to this point, even though these points have had been explained so many times before, and he said he even chastised his disciple, Maharaj Prakrit, saying, I've already answered this question. Don't you remember the power of meditating upon Krishna, even in hate and anger, even in envy, even in affection, even in calm? And he explained this in relationship to Sisupala and his in the first chapter of the seventh canto. So this was concluded. Krishna, attachment to Krishna. And remember how Prabhupada said that Krishna rewards his devotees. If he awards liberation to even the demons, to Sisupala, because of their attachment to him, which is all in a pratikul mood, an unfavorable mood, how does he reciprocate with the residents of Vrindavan, whose love is so full and completely unselfish? We can't imagine, I can't imagine what unselfishness is truly like. That is love. It is not of this world, in fact. Everything in this world is polluted by even the ignorance in this world is polluted, the mode of ignorance from where it can't even be pure in this world. It's always contaminated by the mode of passion and the mode of goodness, even by higher things. There is no 100% pure gold in this world. Everything is impure to a greater or a lesser degree. In Goloka Vrindavan, everything is completely pure. The gopis were completely pure. So we cannot mistake their dealings with Krishna to having anything to do with that which motivates the young boys and the young girls in this world to meet in the middle of the night and dance, whatever else they do. Not like that at all. So after explaining how just any attachment to Krishna is so powerful, then Krishna, or the Prabhupada in the Krishna book, goes back to describing what exactly happened when the gopis, enchanted by Krishna's flute, practically speaking, hypnotized. Their love was complete. Prior to this point, their relationship with Krishna and their love for Krishna was called purvarag, or prior to the actual meeting of Krishna, meeting Krishna. But now here was the opportunity they had prayed to the goddess Kayani for, that they would able to relate to Krishna very intimately. And now Krishna had called them, seeing the beautiful scene of the full moon night of the Sarat season, Krishna playing his vangsi, standing under the tree with the fragrant flower fragrances being carried by the gentle breezes by the river Yamuna under the Vamsivata tree. And the gopis were pulled there due to their love for Krishna, lovingly wishing to serve him. When all the gopis assembled, Prabhupada continues, as described, they assembled before Krishna, he began to speak to them. They had all come to be with him. They had left everything. They had neglected their babies, the threats of their brothers, the threats of their husbands, the threats of their fathers, mothers-in-laws. They were cooking, the milk pot was boiling over. They had neglected everything. And they were now to run to Krishna. Now they were standing before Krishna. And Krishna spoke to them. How is he going to reciprocate with this incredible full sacrifice and full surrender the gopis have made to Krishna? Krishna is the supreme speaker. He is the speaker of the Bhagavad Gita. He can speak on the highest elevated subjects of philosophy, politics, economics, everything. And he also spoke before the gopis, who was so dear to them. Krishna is rasaraj. He knows how to extract love from the heart. He wanted to enchant them. They were already enchanted. He wanted to place them deeper under his spell. Increase their ecstatic love for him. They were already enchanted by the flute. And he began to speak to them, to enchant them by word jugglery. And thus he began to speak as follows. This is how Krishna reciprocated with them. He said, O ladies of Vrindavan, Krishna said, you are very fortunate and you are very dear to me. I am very pleased that you have come here and I hope everything is well in Vrindavan. Now please order me. What can I do for you? What is the purpose of your coming here in this dead of night? Kindly take your seats and let me know what I can do for you. The gopis had come to Krishna to enjoy his company, to dance with him. Krishna is
so naughty.
But everything that Krishna does in his expertise has the purpose of increasing the attachment and the ecstatic love of the residents of Vrindavan, of the gopis. They had come to him to enjoy his company, to dance with him, to embrace him and kiss him. And when Krishna began to receive them very officially, showing all kinds of etiquette, they were surprised, because by the sound of his flute, each one of them were called specifically by names. Usually, the flute calls all the residents of Vrindavan. And he calls the cows, he calls his cowherd boyfriends with his flute. He lets everyone know what he's doing. But here, in this case, the song of the flute called each individual gopi and no one else. And then, when they arrive there, being pulled there, pulled by the flute, Krishna said, "Okay, thank you very much for coming. It's so nice. You're so fortunate. You've come here. Now sit down. How can I help you?" He was treating them as ordinary society women. Therefore, they began to smile amongst themselves. And they were very eagerly listening to Krishna talk in that way. When he saw that they were smiling at him, he said, "My dear friends, you must know that it is the dead of night, and the forest is very dangerous. At this time, all the ferocious jungle animals, the tigers, bears, jackals, and wolves are prowling in the forest." This is how Krishna is dealing with them. "Therefore, it is very dangerous for you. You cannot select a secure place now. Everywhere you go, you will find all these animals are loitering to find their prey. I think, therefore, that you are taking a risk in coming here in the dead of night. Please turn back immediately, without delay. Thank you for coming. You're so fortunate to have come. You've now seen the beauty of the Vrindavan forest on this full moon night of the Sarat season. So you can go home." The gopis again had been pulled there forcibly, forgetting everything. And Krishna is playing with them, manipulating their minds in such a way that they become bewildered, their love for him increases, they go into deeper states of ecstasy. And they were just smiling there. Just smiling. And when Krishna saw that they continued to smile, he said, "I very much appreciate your bodily features. All of you have nice, very thin waists. All of the gopis were exquisitely beautiful. They're described by the word sumadhyama. The standard of beauty of a woman is said to be sumadhyama, when the middle portion of the body is slender. Krishna wanted to impress on them that they were not old enough to take care of themselves. Actually, they required protection. It was not very wise for them to come in the dead of night to Krishna. Krishna also indicated that he was young and they were young girls. It does not look very well for young girls and boys to remain together in the dead of night." And after hearing this advice, the gopis did not seem very happy. Therefore, Krishna began to stress the point in a different way. "My dear friends, I can understand that you have left your homes without the permission of your guardians. Therefore, I think your mothers, your fathers, your elderly brothers, or even your sons, what to speak of your husbands, must be very anxious to find you. And as long as you are here, they must be searching in different places, and their minds must be very agitated. So do not delay. Don't tarry. Please go back and make them peaceful." So the gopis weren't smiling anymore. because they were getting, yes, they had come right to Krishna, and he said, "Thank you very much. You must have really disturbed your relatives." But Krishna had pulled them out himself by the sound of the flute, and then he said, "You should now go back immediately and make your relatives peaceful," like that. And what do you think they were feeling? Yes. The gopis appeared to be a little disturbed and angry from the free advice of Krishna. He began to preach to them. They diverted their attention to looking at the beauty of the forest. At that time, the whole forest was illuminated by the bright shining of the moon. The air was blowing very silently over the blooming flowers, and the green leaves of the trees were moving in the breeze, just gently moving in the breeze. The Vrindavan forest was the perfect scene, the scenery, the stage, the setting for this wonderful exchange. The gopis' love was so complete that their anger was just a manifestation of their love. Just see what the spiritual world is like. It is not qualityless. It is not varietyless. It's not emotionless. There are different varieties of ecstasies that occur in Goloka Vrindavan. And Krishna, just like an expert player of the violin, he knows just how to get every exact sound, the varieties of sounds that he can get from his due to his expertise on that instrument. Not professional musicians, they can appreciate. A person who only knows the Grateful Dead, and they have no idea. They can't even hear anything anymore. Probably their eardrums are so broken. But the virtuoso, it takes a fine musician to appreciate the skill of another, of an extremely expert musician. One needs to be qualified. That's why, by the way, for a similar reason, that in an assembly of devotees after the kirtan, who is supposed to say Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Paribhujak? Who says that? Who glorifies the acharyas? It's the person, not the youngest devotee there, it's the person, the senior devotees are the ones who glorify. Because they're, if the people who don't know anything about music say, this virtuoso, this violin player, it was a great concert, it doesn't really have a depth of meaning. But if the second best player of the violin in the world glorifies the first best violin player, that really has meaning. Because he's a virtuoso himself. The depth of his understanding of what greatness is so far superior to the other. So his glorification means something. So the great rasika devotees, those who are expert at relishing or understanding what is going on the transcendental platform here, when they hear these things, they go into ecstasy. They're completely captivated because they know just what's going on. They experience just what Krishna wants them to experience. They experience, practically speaking, the ecstasy that the gopis were experiencing. And Krishna is playing their emotions. with his words, he's playing their emotions just like the violin player, the expert, virtuoso, maestro. He plays that violin and he gets so many incredible sounds from it. So Krishna is getting, he's churning the ocean of the gopis' love for him, and it's based on their love for him. Without the stai bhava, or the basic love being present, then there is no question of rasa, or the sweetest of tastes generated from that occurring. It cannot occur unless the preliminary loving relationship with Krishna is fully established on the transcendental platform within the heart. So therefore, these chapters of the Bhagavatam, they can be relished by the highest devotees in the highest way. And when we grateful dead hearers say, yeah, it's a great book, this Bhagavatam, it's really a great book. But yet we begin by saying that, and we should hear and hear and hear and hear. So the whole scene, the moon took advantage to make the forest the perfect place for the rasa dance. The breeze, everything in Vrindavan is serving Krishna. It is setting the scene for what? For the gopis to have this exchange with Krishna. And there, and the breeze and the flowers and the green leaves of the trees are moving gently in the breeze. Everything is fragrant, and they're all serving. They all want Krishna to do this, to have this incredible exchange with his devotees when they're giving up everything and running to them. And he's teasing with them. He's treating them like puppets. He's manipulating their emotions in one sense to increase the different varieties of their ecstasies. Krishna took the opportunity of their looking, so they didn't want to look at him when he was speaking like that. So they were just looking around at the forest. And Krishna took the opportunity of their looking at the forest to advise them, I think you have come out to see the beautiful Vrindavan forest on this night. Why else? There's the full moon. Why else could you have come out? But now you're looking, so you've seen the beauty of the Vrindavan forest on this night. So you must be satisfied. So return to your homes without delay. I understand that you are all very chaste women. So now that you have seen the beautiful atmosphere of the Vrindavan forest, please return home and engage in the faithful service of your respective husbands. Some of you must have babies by this time, although you are very young. You must have left your small babies at home, and they must be crying. Please immediately go back home and just feed them with your breast milk. I can also understand that you have very great affection for me, and out of that transcendental affection you have come here, hearing my playing on the flute. Your feelings of love and affection for me are very appreciated, because I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All living creatures are my parts and parcels, and naturally they are affectionate to me. The gopis, in their ecstatic mood of Sringara Ras, of Madhurya Ras, they wanted to embrace Krishna. The fact that he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead was known to them, but it was covered by the sweetness of their love. And Krishna is saying, yes, it's natural that you love me. Another official statement. He's quoting Bhagavad Gita to them. Your feelings of love and affection for me are very appreciated, because I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All living creatures are my parts and parcels, and naturally they are affectionate to me. So this affection for me is very much welcome, and I congratulate you for this. Now you can go back to your homes. Another thing I must explain to you is that for a chaste woman, service to the husband without duplicity is the best religious principle. A woman should not only be faithful and chaste to the husband, but affectionate to the friends of her husband, obedient to the father and mother of the husband, and affectionate to the young brothers of the husband. And most importantly, the women must take care of the children. So Krishna is preaching very good. He's not joking, but he's teasing them with very proper moral instruction. So Prabhupada explains. In this way, Krishna explained the duty of a woman. He also stressed the point of serving the husband. Even if he is not of very good character, or even if he is not very rich or fortunate, or even if he is old or invalid on account of continued diseases, whatever her husband's condition, a woman should not divorce her husband, and if she actually desires to be elevated to the higher planetary systems after leaving this body, she should not divorce her husband. Beside that, it is considered abominable in society if a woman is unfaithful and goes searching for another man. Such habits will deter a woman from being elevated to the heavenly planets. The result of such habits are very degrading. A married woman should not search for a paramour, for this is not sanctioned by the Vedic principles of life. If you think that you are very much attached to me and you want my association, I advise you not to personally try to enjoy me. It is better for you to go home, simply talk about me, think of me, and by this process of constantly remembering me and chanting my names, you will surely be elevated to the spiritual platform. There is no need to stand near me. Please go back home. If you remember in the earlier chapters, when perhaps it was chapter 24, maybe 25, when the wives of the Brahmins also became hypnotized upon when they heard that Krishna was nearby, they dropped everything practically and gathered up their food because they had heard that Krishna was hungry, and they saw Krishna. And Krishna, through their eyes, by looking at him, he entered their hearts and embraced them. And if you remember, he was twirling a lotus flower in his left hand, which indicated two things. By your love, my heart is twirling. And the second was, by your seeing me, your heart is twirling and whirling around. Your mind. So then Krishna spoke to the wives of the Brahmins, and he told them basically the same thing that Krishna here is telling the gopis. He said, you'll get purified. It's better if you go back to your homes and get purified by thinking about me. And Krishna actually even made the wives of the Brahmins who stayed in that village, and he performed, while the husbands of the wives of the Brahmins themselves, while they were performing the sacrifice, and they actually ended up performing the Indra Jagya there. But to make them into devotees, so that they would have someone to associate with, Krishna stayed in that village to make the Brahmins into devotees. So when he basically told them these things that are completely true, that they are perfect moral principles. Without these principles, society cannot stay together. And it was undeniable. It was true. This is the last thing in existence that the gopis wanted to hear at this point. And yet Krishna spoke it to them. After calling them there, admonishing them, you are chaste ladies, you are young. But your highest duty is to take care of your children, your husband, and respect the husband's parents. All true, completely moral. if society doesn't follow these principles, it falls apart, practically speaking. And because society nowadays doesn't follow these principles, it indeed is falling apart. So Krishna spoke this to the gopis. He was increasing their ecstasy, and they were getting more and more angry. But Prabhupada wants us to not take these instructions lightly, as if, oh, Krishna's speaking superficially, as if we don't have to follow these instructions and act on this level. So he continues, the instructions given herein, these instructions should not be minimized. The instructions given herein by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to the gopis was not at all sarcastic. Such instructions should be taken very seriously by all honest women. The chastity of women is specifically stressed herein by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, this principle should be followed by any serious woman who wants to be elevated to a higher status of life. Krishna is the center of all affection for all living creatures. When this affection is developed for Krishna, then one surpasses and transcends all Vedic injunctions. This was possible for the gopis because they saw Krishna face to face. This is not possible for any woman in the conditioned state. Unfortunately, by imitating the behavior of Krishna with the gopis, sometimes a rascal takes the position of Krishna, following the philosophy of monism or oneness, and he very irresponsibly takes advantage of this rasa lila to entice many innocent women and mislead them in the name of spiritual realization. As a warning, Lord Krishna has herein hinted that what was possible for the gopis is not possible for ordinary women. Although a woman can actually be elevated by advanced Krishna consciousness, she should not be enticed by an impostor who says that he is Krishna. She should concentrate her devotional activities in chanting and meditating upon Krishna, as is advised herein. One should not follow the men called sahajiyas, the so-called devotees, who take everything very lightly. So Prabhupada is taking the opportunity to preach and to protect against some of the perverted excesses, material excesses that arose from the Vedic culture and arose from the materialistic mind becoming entangled in these activities and exploitative actions taking place. So Prabhupada preaches strongly about this, as he always does. So did the gopis say, yes, Krishna, you are right, and to set the perfect example, yada yada hi dharmasya, quoting the Bhagavad Gita back to Krishna. To set the perfect example, we will now leave you and go back to our homes and we will meditate upon you. No. When Krishna spoke in such a discouraging way to the gopis, they became very sad. Why? For they thought that their desire to enjoy the rasa dance with Krishna would be frustrated. That's all they wanted, to fulfill the loving desires of Krishna, to dance with them, to embrace them. They became full of anxiety. Out of great sadness, the gopis began to breathe very heavily. Instead of looking at Krishna face to face, they bowed their heads and looked to the ground, and they began to draw various types of curved lines on the ground with their toes. They were shedding heavy tears. They were just young girls, very tender and soft-hearted. Soft, soft heart. He was their first and only love. Come out, giving up everything, and He said, yes, go home. And he preached to them morality. And he was right. They were shedding heavy tears. And their cosmetic decorations were being washed from their faces. The water from their eyes mixed with the kumkum on their breasts and fell to the ground. They could not say anything to Krishna, but simply stood there silently. By their silence, they expressed their hearts were grievously wounded. The gopis were not ordinary women. In essence, they were on an equal level with Krishna. Their expansions of the pleasure, they are his eternal associates, as it is confirmed in the Brahma Samhita. They are expansions of his pleasure potency, of Krishna's pleasure potency. And as his potencies are not different from him. Although they were depressed by the words of Krishna, they did not like to use harsh words against him. Yet, they wanted to rebuke Krishna for his unkind words. And therefore they began to speak in faltering voices. They did not like to use harsh words against Krishna because he was their dearmost, their heart and soul. The gopis had only Krishna within their hearts. They were completely surrendered and dedicated souls. Naturally, when they heard such unkind words, they tried to reply. But in the attempt, torrents of tears fell from their eyes. And finally, they managed to speak. Krishna, they said, you are very cruel. You should not talk like that. We are full-fledged surrendered souls. Please accept us and don't talk in that cruel way. Of course, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and you can do whatever you like. But it is not worthy of your position to treat us in such a cruel way. We have come to you, leaving everything behind, just to take shelter of your lotus feet. We know that you're completely independent and can do whatever you like. But we request you, don't reject us. We are your devotees. You should accept us as Lord Narayan accepts his devotees. There are many devotees of Lord Narayan who worship him for salvation, and he awards them salvation. Similarly, how can you reject us when we have no other shelter than your lotus feet? Oh, dear Krishna, you are the supreme instructor. There is no doubt about it. Your instructions to the women to be faithful to their husbands and to be merciful to their children, to take care of homely affairs and to be obedient to the elderly members of the family are surely just according to the tenets of Shastras. But we know also that it is these instructions of the Shastra may be observed perfectly by keeping oneself under the protection of your lotus feet. Our husbands, friends, family members, and children are all dear and pleasing to us only because of your presence. For you are the supersoul of all living creatures. Without your presence, one is worthless. When you leave the body immediately dies. And according to the injunctions of the Shastra, a dead body must immediately be thrown in a river or burned. Therefore, ultimately, it is you who are the dearmost personality in this world. And by placing our faith and love in your personality, there is no chance of our being bereft of husbands, friends, sons, and daughters. If a woman accepts you as the supreme husband, then she will never be bereft of her husband, as in the bodily concept of life. If we accept you as our ultimate husband, then there is no question of being separated, divorced, or widowed. You are the eternal husband, the eternal son, the eternal friend, the eternal master, and one who enters into a relationship with you is eternally happy. Since you are the teacher of all religious principles, your lotus feet first have to be worshipped. Accordingly, the Shastra state, Acharya Upasana, the worship of your lotus feet is the first principle. Beside that, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, you are the only enjoyer. You are the only proprietor, and you are the only friend. As such, we have come to you, leaving aside all so-called friends, society, and love. And now, you have become our enjoyer. Let us be everlastingly enjoyed by you. Be our proprietor, for that is your natural claim. Be our supreme friend, for you are naturally so. Let us thus embrace you as the supreme beloved. Then the gopis told lotus-eyed Krishna, please do not discourage our long-cherished desire to have you as our husband. Any intelligent man who cares for his own self-interest reposes all his loving spirit in you. Persons who are simply misled by the external energy, who want to be satisfied by false concepts, they are the ones who try to enjoy themselves apart from you. The so-called husband, friend, son, daughter, or father and mother are all simply sources of material misery. No one is made happy in this material world by having a so-called father, mother, husband, son, daughter, and friend. Although the father and mother are expected to protect the children, there are many children who are suffering for want of food and shelter. There are many good physicians, but when a patient dies, no physician can revive him. There are many means of protection, but when one is doomed, none of the protective measures can help. And without your protection, the so-called sources of protection simply become sources of continued distress. We therefore appeal to you, dear Lord of the Lords, please do not kill our long-cherished desire to have you as our supreme husband. Dear Krishna, as women, we are certainly satisfied when our hearts are engaged in the activities of family affairs. But our hearts have already been stolen by you. We can no longer engage them in family affairs. Beside that, you are asking us repeatedly to return home, and that is a very appropriate instruction. But unfortunately, we have been stunned here. Our legs have no power to move a step from your lotus feet. Therefore, even at your request, we return home. What shall we do there? We have lost all our capacity to act without you. Instead of engaging our hearts in family affairs as women, we have now developed a different type of lust which is continually blazing in our hearts. Now we request you, dear Krishna, to extinguish that fire with your beautiful smile and the transcendental vibration emanating from your lips. If you do not agree to do us this favor, we shall certainly be burned in the fire of separation. In that condition, we shall simply think of you and your beautiful features and give up our bodies immediately. In that way, we think it will be possible for us to reside at your lotus feet in the next life. Dear Krishna, if you say that we should go home, if we go home, our respective husbands will satisfy the lusty flame of our desire, we can only say that is no longer possible. You have given us a chance to be enjoyed by you in the forest and have touched our breast once in the past, which we accepted as a blessing, as did the goddess of fortune, who are enjoyed in the Vaikuntha lokas by you. Since we have tasted this transcendental enjoyment, we are no longer interested in going to anyone but you for the satisfaction of our lust. Dear Krishna, the lotus feet of the goddess of fortune are always worshipped by the demigods. Although she is always resting on your chest in the Vaikuntha planets, she underwent great austerity and penance to have some shelter at your lotus feet, which are always covered by tulsi leaves. Your lotus feet are the proper shelter of your servitors. And the goddess of fortune, instead of abiding on your chest, comes down and worships your lotus feet. We have now placed ourselves fully under the dust of your lotus feet. Please do not reject us, for we are fully surrendered souls. Dear Krishna, you are known as Hari. You destroy all the miseries of all living entities, specifically of those who have left their homes and family attachments and have completely taken to you. We have left our homes. Why? With the hope that we shall completely devote and dedicate our lives to your service. We are simply begging to be engaged as your servants. We do not wish to ask you to accept us as your wives. Simply accept us as your maidservants. Since you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead and like to enjoy the Parakya Ras and are famous as a transcendental woman hunter, we have come to satisfy your transcendental desires. We are also after our own satisfaction, for simply by looking at your smiling face, we have become very lusty. We have come before you decorated with all ornaments and dress, but until you embrace us, all our dresses and beautiful features remain incomplete. You are the Supreme Person, and if you complete our dressing attempt as the Purusha Bhushana, or the male ornament, then all our desires and bodily decorations, unless you do that, everything is incomplete. Dear Krishna, we have simply been captivated by seeing you with tilak, with earrings, and by seeing your beautiful face covered with scattered hair and your extraordinary smile. Not only that, but we are also attracted by your arms, which always give assurance to the surrendered souls. And although we are also attracted by your chest, which is always embraced by the goddess of fortune, we do not wish to take her position. We shall simply be satisfied by being your maidservants. If you ever accuse us of encouraging prostitution, then we can only ask, where is that woman within these three worlds who is not captivated by your beauty and the rhythmic songs vibrated by your transcendental flute? Within these three worlds, there is no distinction between men and women in relationship to you, because both men and women belong to the marginal potency or prakriti. No one is actually the enjoyer or the male. Everyone is meant to be enjoyed by you. There is no woman within these three worlds who cannot be deviated from her path of chastity once she is attracted to you, because your beauty is so sublime that not only men and women, but cows and birds and beasts and even trees, fruits and flowers, everyone and everything become enchanted, and what to speak of ourselves. It is, however, definitely decided that as Lord Vishnu is always protecting the demigods from the onslaught of demons, so you have also invented in Vrindavan just to give the residents protection from all kinds of distress. O dear friend of the distressed, kindly place your hand on our burning breasts as well as on our heads, because we have surrendered unto you as your eternal maidservants. If you think, however, that your lotus-like palms might be burnt to ashes if placed on our burning breasts, let us assure you that your palms will feel pleasure instead of pain, as the lotus flower, although very delicate and soft, enjoys the scorching heat of the sun. So the gopis in this way responded to Krishna. And upon hearing the anxious plea of the gopis, the Supreme Personality of Godhead began to smile. And being very kind to the gopis, the Lord, although self-sufficient, began to embrace them and kiss them as they desired. When Krishna, smiling, looked at the faces of the gopis, the beauty of their faces became hundreds of times enhanced. So notice how the gopis were completely saying, our only desire is to serve you. And Krishna wants to please them. And we've heard again and again and again Sukadeva Goswami, Prabhupada's words, preparing us to understand that this is not the dealings between boys and girls, men and women, male and female of this world. There is not a tinge of lust. It is not iron, but it is pure gold. But the material mind cannot see that. It cannot perceive as such. Why? Because it is a material mind. It must become purified. It must become purified to the point of complete selfless love for Krishna. And that begins Anya Vilasita Sunyam Jnana Kamana Vita. But this is Krishna consciousness on the highest of the highest levels. So when Krishna, smiling, looked at the faces of the gopis, the beauty of their faces became 100 times enhanced. When he was enjoying them in their midst, he appeared just like the full moon surrounded by millions of shining stars. Thus the Supreme Personality of Godhead, surrounded by hundreds of gopis and decorated with a flower garland of many colors, began to wander within the Vrindavan forest, sometimes singing to himself and sometimes singing with the gopis. In this way, both the Lord and the gopis reached the cool sandy bank of the Yamuna, where there were lilies and lotus flowers. In such a transcendental atmosphere, both the gopis and Krishna began to enjoy one another. While they were walking on the bank of the Yamuna, Krishna would sometimes put his arms around the gopis' head, breast, or waist, pinching one another and joking and looking at one another. They enjoyed. When Krishna touched the bodies of the gopis, their lust to embrace him increased. They all enjoyed these pastimes. Thus, the gopis were blessed by all mercy by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for they enjoyed his company without a tinge of mundane sex life. All we can say, practically speaking, is that this has nothing to do with the material world. This is reality. That is the reflection. In reality, Krishna is the enjoyer. In the reflection, in the perverted reflection, we think of ourselves as the enjoyers. It is a reflection. It is a perversion. It has no reality attached to it. The gopis, however, soon began to feel very proud, thinking themselves to be the most fortunate women in the universe by being favored by the company of Krishna. Lord Krishna, who is known as Keshava, could immediately understand their pride caused by their great fortune of enjoying him personally. In order to show him causeless mercy and to curb their false pride, he immediately disappeared from the scene, exhibiting his opulence of renunciation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is always full with 6 kinds of opulences, and this is an instance of the opulence of renunciation. He just left that scene. He has no attachment, Prabhupada is explaining, to the desire to enjoy. This is beyond mundane sex life. It is completely beyond it. The Supreme Personality, and Prabhupada preaches here, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always full with 6 kinds of opulences, and this is an instance of the opulence of renunciation. This renunciation confirms Krishna's total non-attachment. He is always self-sufficient and is not dependent on anything. This is the platform on which the transcendental pastimes are enacted. Thus in the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 29th chapter of Krishna, the Rasa Dance, the introduction. So when we continue this, the Bhagavatam, if Krishna allows, when I return, we'll start again. We'll read this chapter again, but we'll read it from the Bhagavatam itself and take into account the commentaries of the acharyas, how they explain these verses and expand the meanings and increase the depth of our understanding and the sweetness of this most incredible pastime, most transcendental pastime, most inconceivable pastime. The most religious pastime, the most moral pastime. The most transcendental pastime. Or the old and all transcendental pastime. Okay, thank you very much. Any questions or comments? Well, there's not really any time for questions or comments.
I had a question last time. You were talking about how the gopis moved to the temple where
that's what was said.
We all know that communication that needs to be removed. But what about the highest reactions? Aren't we supposed to accumulate them?
Not material pious activities, because they cause material enjoyment. Everyone is a mixture of the reactions of their pious deeds in previous lives and impious deeds in previous lives, and therefore everyone has a mixture of happiness and distress in their lives. But both of those have to be removed, because Krishna consciousness is on a completely different platform. So material piety, not spiritual piety. Spiritual piety is something we should increase forever, because spiritual piety is unselfish. It's meant for Krishna's pleasure. Well, that's how Prabhupada explains it here. Prabhupada wants us to have that understanding here in the Krishna book, that they left this world and they went on. The acharyas have also explained it in other ways too, and we'll describe those, but we'll hear it from a different perspective. Many of the things Prabhupada says, clearly he's also talking, it's a summary study. He doesn't explain every detail of everything. He can't do that in a summary study. And he's making this. He wanted this book distributed. He was thousands and thousands and thousands. They put them, remember, they made sets, the trilogies, and he was having them distributed all over. During the Christmas marathon, the devotees would distribute thousands and these to people who had never heard of Krishna. Their concept of God was, if anything, you know, anything, was nothing. Basically, even if they were religious believers, there was no clear conception of a person who was God. So Prabhupada puts he integrates the preaching within the pastime very expertly. Although there are details that one could add, but yet that also has to be accomplished. And if you remember how when Prabhupada wrote this book, none of the devotees knew anything about Krishna even. It was in 1970. And that's why he did this book so early, is because he said, because I may leave this world, and how can I leave without you understanding the pastimes of Krishna? But how can I give you babies, children, the pastimes of Krishna either, because you'll misunderstand everything. So this is how he chose to do it, to integrate, make a summary study. He did this. He also did that teachings of Lord Chaitanya, Chaitanya Charitamrita plus more. So we'd have everything, and then the everything can be fluffed out and expanded, not fluffed out in a meaningless way, but there's an infinite, Krishna's lila is infinitely expandable too, and the acharyas have expanded it to an amazing degree by their explanations. They reveal the mind of, and the activities, more of the mind and the activities of what's going on. Okay, it's late now, so we'll end. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Sri Prabhupada, good day.
On behalf of all the devotees, we'd like to take the opportunity to thank Gurujan Prabhu for again giving us these wonderful classes this year. wonderful talk in the Bhagavatam, looking up in this way.
It is wonderful, I have to admit it. Even in the early days of the movement, this is what the devotees would do. They would sit around and read Krishna book together. And when the young boys and young girls were getting married, there was that first stage we used to call the Krishna book and hot milk stage. They used to sit and read Krishna book together and drink hot milk, and they'd have stars in their eyes. Did you ever go through that stage, Rishi? but this was the most amazing thing. No one had ever heard of the pastimes of Krishna before. So wonderful. And yet it's ever fresh. You know, now the Prabhupada translated this book in the late 60s. And it was printed in 1970 in Japan by Dainapani. And then there was a Rath Yatra in 1970. And Brahmananda took care of, I was in Japan at that time. Yeah. And Brahmananda got some books, 6 or 10 books, and he carried them, first 6 and 10 books, to present them to Prabhupada at Rath Yatra. And he gave them to Prabhupada. And what did Prabhupada do?
So he held them up, and the whole auditorium full of people, and they were all absolutely amazed.
Because there's this big book. No one ever saw a book so physically big either at this time.
And then we have just got this book, and you glorify the book, and then you open it up, and then you offer the, you would autograph them, and you would sell, and people would come forward.
And how many were there? Maybe 10 or 6? Yeah. Yeah. And there were only, and at that time there were only, it was the Bhagavad Gita, the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. There were the Krishna books, first volume of the Bhagavatam, and maybe the second volume of the second canto of the Bhagavatam. Yeah. That was all. And the devotees were completely absorbed in Krishna's pastimes. Everything we now take for granted. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
We couldn't arrange Krishna book and Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah.
We have got some Gopinath girls.
Oh, very good. And also, if anyone has any letters for me to take, I shall accept them. And on Monday we go. Very good. Did you put your name? Yes. Okay. Thank you.